Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I am Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio. Welcome to the show. I think that we are on today. Apologies for yesterday. Don't know what happened. People were calling in and it wasn't connecting to the show. They weren't showing up on the switchboard. And then Michael and I, after about 20 minutes, we couldn't even get it to operate. So apologies for that. That's only the second time in almost 7 years that we have missed doing a show. And it's not been because we've chosen to not do it. So welcome to the show. This is Tuesday. It's May the 23rd, 2017. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Welcome, everyone. Honored and delighted that you're with us once again to engage in this conversation about the energetic healing dynamics as laid out in the first century Aramaic language by a man named Yeshua. His name is thought in this culture to be Jesus, but that is an error. That was not his name. And like the error in thinking that was his name, many words have been misunderstood and mistranslated. And so we've worked diligently to go back to the first century language, the first century culture of the man, and understand in the cultural context just what those words meant that he spoke so clearly. The thought I have to share today fits very well with one of his ancient directives. When we listen to him say, the Greeks translate his words as, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. Now, of course, your culture has taught you that the issues in your life are out of somebody else's problem. Certainly not yours. Certainly must be somebody else. And if you're in a world where you think that your life would get better if somebody else would just change, then you bought into the cultural insanity that somebody else is the problem in your life. Man, Yeshua says, take care of the heart. And of course, does that mean that this little, you know, 2.5 or 3 pound organ in my chest is the problem in my relationships or my finances or my business or my health? Does that mean, no, that's not what it means at all. Obviously, that's pretty silly. So what does the word heart mean? Sounds like if this man has an understanding of what the issue is in your life, it might be good to know what his words meant. Lots of people say lots of words about him, but rarely listen or have a clue what he actually said. Somebody else told them some story.
They called it doctrine or dogma, and you better listen or you'll go to a hot, fiery place for life.
And, you know, it's all in the context of Yeshua's teachings. That's just plain silly stuff. But he does say you need to take care of your heart. So let's look into what the heart means. In our modern world, you know, in the lifetime of, or close to the lifetime of some of us around, there was a man named Freud, and he was given a Nobel Prize for the what they called the discovery of the unconscious. You know, my offering is Freud no more discovered the unconscious than fly in the air. But he did rediscover it in the West. The word for the unconscious in Aramaic is the heart. It was very well understood. All of that we've come to understand about the unconscious is built right into the syntax of the Aramaic language. For instance, there's a suffix in Aramaic, and the suffix is O-O-T-A, uta. And if you add that suffix to a word in Aramaic, what that means is that something in your unconscious is impacting your perception, decisions, and your behaviors. Now, if you've ever had somebody say to you, gee, why do you see things that way? Why is your perception like that? Why did you make that decision? Why did you behave that way? And you've said to yourself or to them, well, you know, I just don't know. I just, you know, perceive it that way. I just behave that way. I don't know why. Well, if you understood Yeshua's words, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life, you'd say, because there's something in my unconscious that is impacting my perception, my decisions, and my behavior. And I'm not in touch with it, so that's why I don't know why I perceive that way, why I made that decision, or why I'm doing this behavior. Unconscious. So this was saying we need to look into these unconscious dynamics, and then if we find in our unconscious untoward information, information that doesn't support us functioning as human beings, and our definition of a human being is simple, hold a newborn child. So if there's something in your heart or your unconscious that doesn't support you living as a human, take a look around. You know, just take a look at the political process today. Tell me how much human life you see. You know, the craziness that's running the world is bizarre. And it's unconsciousness. So then we take another statement that Yeshua makes, and he says, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. And you go, what does that mean? Do I need to go into this little 2 or 3 pound organ in my chest and remove something about my brother? That's silly. That doesn't make any sense. Well, go read his words. That's what he, according to the Greeks, that's what he said. Most people believe Greek ideas in place of Yeshua's first century words. And Yeshua, if he sat in most circles where he's talked about today, would say, that's all Greek to me. What does it mean? You must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. Well, I'd offer that if there's something painful, traumatic in your unconscious, that is something you're hiding from yourself that's based in some form of hostility or fear, then that hostility or fear, if it is resonated by another person, in this case your brother, then what's going to happen is your mind is going to utilize that hidden part of itself to build a perceptual construct about whoever you're blaming at the moment. If it happens to be your brother,
then what's hidden in your heart is literally going to show up as a picture world where you see your brother as the problem. Now, if that happens once, you go, well, you know, maybe I'm right. It happens twice, well, maybe I'm right. Three times, gee, maybe there's something not off, not right here. If you've been through it 87 different times with 42 different people and there's always somebody else to point a finger at, maybe you got to start to recognize, maybe this is something in my unconscious that I'm refusing to deal with, and I need to learn how to go inside of it, that is inside of my own unconscious, and remove what I'm putting into my brain's image of everybody else. It's such a genius piece of advice. There's an interesting quote from Carl Jung where, I forget, I may be off a little bit here, but in essence he says that it just amazes him the bizarre and insane things that people will do in order not to look at themselves. In order not, I mean, they will puke on the people they cherish the most. They will destroy them, utterly destroy them, verbally, emotionally, perceptually, in order not to look at their own unconscious dynamics. They have sitting before them the ideal circumstance, and they will shatter that circumstance because they refuse to love truth enough to look at what's going on within their own unconscious. So when I'm experiencing a painful experience, you know, short of somebody coming up, you know, somebody comes up and punches me in the nose, cancel the thought, I can say, you know, you really hurt me. And, you know, that's true. But short of somebody doing that, if I'm in hurt and pain, you know, I just got off the phone with somebody who's on the other side of the country, and I actually believe, I mean, people actually believe, well, that person, they don't logically think this through, but when they say, yeah, well, when Charlie talked to me this morning, boy, he really hurt me. Excuse me, where was Charlie? Oh, he's in California. Where were you? Well, I'm in Missouri. So when you say, talk to Charlie on the phone this morning and he really hurt you, what in essence you're saying is, Charlie reached through the air. Well, we were on cell phones. These are, you know, energetic patterns flying through the air. He reached all the way from California in through my phone, reached inside of me, and ripped at something. And as he ripped it out of me, I was hurt. Think about that for a moment, folks. Does that make any sense? Except that you've been taught a lie that somebody else is the cause of your pain. When you wake up and start to look at your own unconscious, when you have the tools, life becomes a whole lot easier. Because you no longer go around saying, look what you did to me. You know, somebody does things that are out of integrity, and you can go, that was really out of integrity. But you didn't do it to me, you did it to yourself. Did it affect me? Well, it might have. It might cost me $1 million. And if I'm in pain over that $1 million, then I've got some work to do because my pain is my pain. It's in my heart. It's not from you. Is it reasonable for me to hold you accountable because you're out of integrity and cost me $1 million? Absolutely. But if I go raging and screaming after you, I'm going to get my vengeance on you. My vengeance is going to destroy me. When in fact what you've done is shown me something inside of me called vengeance that I have the opportunity to heal. Life, relationships, everything just gets so much easier when you have tools, and perhaps you will be the first person in 1,000 generations of your bloodline to suspect that out of your heart come the issues of your life. Perhaps you'll be the first person in 1,000 generations that has reached back into your own heart and removed
the trauma and the pain that never belonged there, the trauma that was planted perhaps decades ago, perhaps centuries ago. And we had an interesting conversation with Dr. Tim on Friday. Dr. Tim brought up the idea that there was perhaps a misperception that once you've got tools, then everything is bliss and wonderment and all rocks right along in your life. You know, Tim talks about how much better his life is. And he clarified, that's not what I mean. You know, still have challenges, still have things going on, but I don't have to do the whole drama and trauma routine. I can go, there's something in my heart I need to deal with here. And so when I utilize the tools, I play a different game. I don't have pain moving me. Do my best to hold my breath and keep my pain hidden from myself. And the next person who happens to bump into that pain, I puke all over them. That's what was meant when he said, oh, life is so much easier. And, you know, people say, well, how long does this, I mean, Michael, how long does this take? You know, will I be finished if I start doing this? Will I be finished in 2 weeks? 2 months. Certainly within 2 years. What, Michael, you've been doing this work for almost 50 years and you're not finished yet? We actually had a friend of Tim's who introduced him to the work who at one point lamented to Tim how silly it was to do anything that Michael Rice said because he's been doing this work for 35 years and he's not finished, so it must not work. Well, I guess that's one perspective, but the truth is when you realize that these energetic patterns that we hold pass from generation to generation to generation, and that some of the patterns that you're ultimately going to get to deal with are going to be so unrecognizable. They're going to be energetic dynamics held in you, but when they come forward, they're going to be so unrecognizable that you're not even going to know what they are. It's one of the skills you need to develop is the ability to decode these patterns that are, in many cases, many, many generations old. Sunday, we went to lunch with some friends, a little town north of where we're staying here near St. Louis. And they had an interesting set of events going on. They had tents all over town. They had all kinds of artists and food and a car show. It was pretty cool, you know, festival kind of thing. So we had lunch and came out from the festival or came out from lunch and walked down the street and we were going through some of the booths. And I walked into a booth where there's this photographer that's just got this awesome art. I mean, the live photos of animals, of nature scenery were just phenomenal. And one was just this absolutely beautiful wolf in the wild. And when I was in the early days of my career, I had a cousin, and my cousin and I bought two pups from a litter of Siberian Husky timber wolves. And as I'm looking at this picture, it's like this wolf looked just like the Husky wolf that I had way back. Let's see, that's probably 45 years ago. And I was just marveling at how beautiful the picture was. And the person who was running the booth said, hi, how are you? You know, conversation. I said, yeah, it's an awesome picture. She told me a little bit about the artist. I said, yeah. I said, well, that wolf in particular, I had a timber wolf husky when I was young. And my cousin had one. They were twins. These animals, and I'm sharing with this woman, these animals were so intelligent. They were each about 80 pounds at 6 months of age, just huge animals. You could, and I'm sharing with her, you could carry on a conversation. So I'm thinking back, and the name of this this husky wolf was Cayenne. And I shared with her, you know, I had a wolf named Cayenne, and absolutely awesome, brilliant animal. You could carry on a conversation. It took one day to housebreak him, to teach him that, you know, he did his business outside. That's how intelligent he was. And as I'm sharing that, all of a sudden, I have this pounding in my chest, and an instant lightheadedness where I almost passed out. Whoa, what was that? I mean, I literally had to hold on to something. I was about to fall over. And all of a sudden, this flood of emotion came. My cousin, his wife, had decided that she would, we kept them, you know, in a guarded area. And she decided she was going to let them out and go romping in the field with them. They were just lovely, playful animals that loved each other. They're running through the field, and they got wound up in themselves and ended up running off of the 5-acre piece of land that they were on onto a highway, and they were both killed by the same truck. And I've shared that story with others before without any emotion. As I share it now, there's a little bit of emotion. But on Sunday afternoon, the floodgates opened, and it just about physically knocked me over when I got in touch with directly what was in my unconscious around the loss of that animal. Care the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. And you never know what the circumstances are as you do your work that are going to allow something like that to open and give you the opportunity to remove that energy. You might remember on Mother's Day, or actually the day after Mother's Day, I asked Jeannie to share a story about called Just a Mom. And we've shared that on a couple of other Mother's Days over the years. And I asked Jeannie to share it because I couldn't read it out loud. And what I realized on Sunday, with it being that close to having just done that was just, what, a week or 2 weeks ago, I realized that it was the emotion from around the death of that dog that when I would read that story would come up for me, and why I couldn't read it. Take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. Nobody knows what's in their own hearts. That's why it's called the unconscious, let alone somebody else's. And one of the things we try to do is figure it out. Now, if I'd have sat and logically tried to figure out why that story was so difficult for me to read, and I've done worksheets around it before. Remember Yeshua, and they said to him, you know, how many worksheets? Is 7 worksheets enough around this issue? Yeshua says, no, it's going to take 77 times 70 in some cases. You can do a lot of work to open up that hidden part, and you're going to have the vitality to be able to process through that intensity. And for me, on Sunday, this just brought the point home. I mean, literally, the instant this happened, when the energy hit my brain, canceled the thought, but it was like, oh, my God, is this a stroke happening? What's going on here? That's how powerful the visceral physical response was from accessing this memory. And then I stood in the street and asked Jeannie for support, and she just stood there and did a love exchange with me and held the space as I stood, you know, here I am in the middle of a crowd of hundreds of people in these booths, and I'm just standing there crying away as this energy moves. You never know when it's going to open. You never know what's going to trigger it. And all the factors, you know, when we do an intensive, we work, you know, it's been my study for the last half a century. What factors empower people to open those kinds of things so they can free themselves of it? And so I suspect, I haven't talked with Tim about this, but if he's with us, I suspect that based on our conversation Friday, that Tim might have some thoughts and some insight to share with us, just to deepen the understanding of what this process really is and what it really looks like. And, of course, why it isn't Dr. Feelgood, you know, standing in the middle of the street with all these people that are crying, wait, it's not Dr. Feelgood. But sooner or later, if you're not willing to touch into, on a visceral level, everything that's in your structure that's unlike love, then your life is going to be run by those unconscious dynamics. And that doesn't work for a human being. Get it? You got to be able to open those things and work through them to actually function as a human. Otherwise, behavior, thoughts, feelings, perceptions will be driven by those hidden dynamics. I mean, that piece of insight from that man 2,000 years ago is so huge. And then to have handed us the technology for how to free ourselves of those things, to have had that technology 2,000 years ago and said, here it is, folks, here's how you do it. Yeah, you might do 77 times 70 worksheets, and that might take you a year or two or 10. That issue might come up once every 30 years. The circumstances might be right. You might happen to walk down the street and see the picture that triggers those brain cells. And bang, now that you're vital enough, I suspect that if maybe that had opened for me 20 years ago, I don't know what would have happened. I mean, it was so powerful, and to have been able to handle the visceral response, and literally, I mean, I'd literally almost passed out from it. 20 years ago, who knows what that would have done? Might have been physically damaging to me. So I just invite you to recognize how the process works, what the process is, and trust the process. Trust that elemental force that we call Rukka to guide you, to support you, and give yourself permission to deal with those things, to see those things, to feel those things, to work through those things. And what you'll find is on the other side of every layer that you peel out, there's going to be more vitality, more aliveness, more joy, more of everything that people would say, ah, that's the kind of life that I want. So if Dr. Tim's with us, Jeannie, I'd like to open the floor. And actually, maybe I should just invite you, Jeannie, seeing as how you were standing right there holding the space for me, to share anything you might have to share before we ask Dr. Tim for any thoughts he might have or extended ideas that he might have in regard to this conversation from Friday and what I just shared.
Well, it was powerful just to be able to stand there and hold the space for you. As you know, at first I didn't know what was going on or what you were dealing with, and you know, about the dizziness or anything, and just knew that something was in your face, and just stood there and held the space with my hand on your chest. And you know, it was powerful to be on the other end of that, just holding it for you, and I was glad I was there. Speaking of that, also brought to mind, Julie from Oregon had texted this morning, and she's letting her older dog go this morning, and asked that we hold the space for her.
Bless her heart.
She's had Ulysses for a long time, and of course Susan just went through some of that too. You know, we get so attached to our animals, and I think, you know, a loss is a loss, and I know that it's not natural, but it has become normal for us to kind of get lost in loss sometimes. But it's just opening the next layer. And Dr. Tim is with us.
Well, let's say hello and see if he has anything to share with us. Tim, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Awesome.
I'm well. Well,
well, that seemed like a perfect extension from our conversation on Friday, a perfect experience for me to have and then start the show. I spent the first 5 or 6 minutes of the show yesterday with that conversation and found I wasn't on the air. So,
well, I'm sure it was good. Yeah, I'm sure it was really marvelous, although none of us got to hear it.
Right, exactly.
Well, the brain cells that resonate for me are that I will occasionally have people that I'm working with, and they'll make a statement that is just so intense about a situation that most people, even the person who's making the statement, when they step back, they look at the situation and they say, well, gee, that's kind of an overreaction. And that's one of the things that clues me into when I hear it in myself or I hear it in somebody else, that those UTA brain cells have been triggered, like you're talking about, that the unconscious is driving what I'm saying or my perception at this time. And one of them happened yesterday, a woman just about to be 60 years old, and she was talking about her situation, and she said, my quality of life isn't very good right now. Now, that phrase, quality of life, is usually something we hear people talking about when they're considering, do we withdraw the feeding tube? Do we take them off the ventilator? You know, like at the end of somebody's life. And yet, this is a person who's about to become 60 who has a job, has very good health, is living in a wonderful home, has creative expression as part of her life, has wonderful friends. And so the phrase, my quality of life isn't very good right now, was a big red flag for this must be something from her past has been resonated that, you know, at a time in her life where she didn't have as many resources and or had a completely different life situation, that's gotten resonated because she clearly has a very good quality of life right now. She's living in America. There's no active war going on here. There's plenty of money to pay the bills, et cetera. So that's, you know, another use for this. If I can learn to watch my language, if I can learn to listen for times when I'm being overly dramatic in my assessment or response to things, that's a very good indicator that I should then start using the tools to uncover what is it in my unconscious that's grabbed a hold of me, that's distorting my perception in this moment, that has me living from the past instead of in full awareness and appreciation of what I have in the moment. So that's what got triggered for me.
Good point. Certainly a powerful way to be aware of those unconscious things moving is to really watch language. That's right on track. There's a piece that Shakespeare gave us when he said, my words fly up, my thoughts remain below. It's just another way of saying, I'm unconscious of what's going on here. And it's part of, you know, in Laws of Living, we spend a lot of time talking about regulatory speech. And we invite people to support each other in feeding back their speech. And you listen to the speech that people use in this culture, and it's so bizarre. I mean, how often it's like, it's just about a daily occurrence, or many times a day, we hear people saying, you know, I hear people, oh, that really kills me. That's to die for. say, well, you know, you might really want to take a look at what the unconscious dynamics are of something that you really like and think is great, that you're going to die for it, you know. And how bizarre our culture is, you know. Somebody will say, you know, especially men, we've been programmed, you know, I love you so much, I would die for you. And it's like, well, actually, a lot of people do die metaphorically. The real question would be in that case is, would you live for this person? Would you function as a human being? Would you be 24/7, 365, the active presence of love? Is that person so important to you that you'd be willing to do that? Would you live for them? That's a much more powerful and heroic statement to make than you'll die for them. But there's just so much unconscious language in our culture, unconscious language in music. You listen to some of the things kids are listening to today, and it's just, wow, unbelievable at what's being structured into their unconscious. And it's also interesting that oftentimes when you point out people's regulatory speech, they'll very often, when you give them literally the words they just said literally 30 seconds ago, that they can't remember saying it. They're just, no, I didn't say that. I was like, well, there were five of us here that heard you. That's what you said. Oh, no, no. But, you know, a lot of speech is unconscious, so good point to just keep aware, keep awake. Watching speech is really key because it'll tell us what's floating around down there. Another good point is that you listen to what people say they're not going to do. You know, listen to the politicians. If the politician really meant, I am going to make sure that you and the poor are well taken care of and that, you know, you're going to get your country back, if that's what they really meant to do, that's what they'd say. But if they say, well, I'm going to make sure that you're not ripped off anymore, I'm going to make sure that, then you can be just assured that that's where they're heading. So it's all language. It's just it's a big wake-up call, really. Watch and look at and be conscious of language. Learn to decode. You know, a skill we're inviting people to develop is one that has been unheard of on planet Earth, at least as far as I can tell, virtually unheard of. And that is the skill and the ability to reach into every nook and cranny of your mind, your emotions, your thoughts, and your genes. Learn to decode what's there and work through it. That's the skill we're really inviting people to develop. And of course, you know, when you realize that's where our whole life comes from, it's no small feat. You know, I'll oftentimes people will say things to me, you know, it's like, well, I have $5 in 5 minutes, Michael. Tell me everything you know. You know, I want to know all the secrets to life, and I want them yesterday. If I were going to become an attorney, I'd go to school for 8 years. If I were going to become a doctor, I'd go to school for 10 years. If I were going to become a vet, I'd go to school for 5 years. If I were going to become a dentist, I'd go to school for 5 years. But I want all the answers to life that all the philosophers and virtually everybody that's ever lived have tried to figure out and haven't been able to. I want those answers yesterday. Don't make me work for them. Just give me the answers. You know, it's silliness. It's a process. The genius that Yeshua brought forward 2,000 years ago, and for me, the appreciation of the fact that I have gotten to interact with him so directly through his first century words, it's just such a blessing and such a privilege to take it to the world, and to which has given me the opportunity to continue to work with the tools and continue to do my work and my process. So, delighted that you're here to share it with us. Any other thoughts before we check on the phone lines, Tim?
Say that again, Michael.
I say, any other thoughts before we check on the phone lines?
Well, I think that's sufficient. I think it's, it's the kind of thing that we have to just keep doing over and over and to get to different depths. And, you know, I was working with somebody today saying very much the same thing you're talking about and introducing the idea that we have to be willing to just keep observing and questioning, because this stuff, it's like Dale Allen Hoffman talks about, there are all of these different levels of observation that seem secret to us if we haven't been trained to look for them. And then once we're trained to look for them, they're just obvious. So I'm thrilled to be able to have been introduced to this at a time when I could have the level of understanding that let me practice it over and over and over again.
Well, I'm with you on that. Let's check with Jeannie.
Hi there. Nobody has their hand up, and someone in the chat room was just asking about yesterday that the archive wasn't there. So instead of me typing out the long explanation, I'll just say again, I did the introduction, and Michael talked to himself for about 10 minutes when people started texting us that they were still hearing the intro music of Blog Talk, that it had never come on, that they couldn't hear. And I thought it was weird. There was nobody on the switchboard or in the chat room. And so we finally, both of us hung up and dialed in again. And then finally, after about the third time, it wouldn't even let us dial back in. And when I tried to click on Blog Talk to chat with somebody, it came back and said that the assistants were unavailable. And so we just ended up after about 25 minutes saying, okay, no show today. So that's what happened to yesterday. So no, there is no archive out there because we never were heard. So anyway, there are no hands up. So if someone presses one, whoop, a hand just went up. And I think this might be Miss Michelle, 248. You're on the air. How you doing, hon?
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Michael. Hi, Tim.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Thank you. So my sharing today, why I wanted to call, was when you were talking about applying the tools consistently and progressively, I wanted to introduce another item on the all of the above list. I don't think I told you about this yet. It's kind of just gotten lost in all my activities. It's a device called Spire, and kind of like Inspiration, and it is a small device that I wear on the inside of my bra, and they showed men wearing it on their belt clip, that monitors and creates a logarithm for me of my breaths per minute. And then I've got an app on my phone that interfaces with it through a Bluetooth connection. And in the last 2 weeks, I have, for you know, much as I teach this work, found new levels of awareness related to connecting my mind, body, and breath. And
cool.
So it it has, like, you know, your baseline of whatever your normal is. But then if I have a calm streak, which would be indicative of, you know, a more rhythmic intake and outtake versus a more erratic one, because if I do that, it will give me an alarm or alert. It will vibrate on my body. Like right now it is, it's funny, because as I said that, it started buzzing, and then the alert says, your breathing has been tense for 11 minutes, and it's been on and off because I was writing some texts, actually, and so that's what I was connecting it to. I'm writing these texts, a lot of, a list of chores that I'm sharing with my daughter, and what I recognize is I'm thinking about all these deadlines that I have related to some guests coming in the next couple days. And so there's lots of things to do to get ready. Just normal routine stuff that you do during your day, but in these little moments where you hold your breath, or it will give me an alarm anytime it's 20% like more shallow or more rapid. You know, there was one day that I felt really accomplished because I only had 4 minutes of tense breathing. My worst day, I had 1.9 hours. So it's just a really cool...
That gave you some good worksheets to do, right?
It became... It had helped me become aware of the worksheets I needed to do, yes.
Oh, cool.
So
awesome.
It cost me $99, and it has already paid for itself because it's also loaded. I haven't explored everything, all kinds of guided meditations. There's some interactive activities where, let's say if you were feeling panicky and it's registering, hey, you need time for a break, where you can follow these visual patterns of these little dots on the application, where when you breathe, if you breathe your inhale and your exhale are matching, then they'll turn green. If they're not smooth and consistent, it will stay gray. And, you know, usually in under a minute, if you follow this and kind of it gives you feedback as you're going, like a biofeedback in the moment, then you can regulate your breath to a part where you're calm again. And it's just, I mean, I can't speak enough good things about the assistance it's provided.
So it's called Spire, S-P-I-R-E?
You got it. And I've been telling clients about it because, it's promoted and marketed like as a way to reduce anxiety, as a way to increase mindfulness, like kinds of things. So I said, let's do my field research and test it on myself before I recommend to clients. And as I've had success, someone shared with me they've got 10 million Google hits on this thing.
Cool. Well, that's interesting. I actually was introduced last week. I've been researching another device that is like a wristwatch type of thing, but it tracks blood pressure and breath and all sorts of things. So I haven't completed looking at it, but I'll be bringing that forward too and letting people know about it if it all proves out. But the technology is definitely moving in the right direction for support.
I have a client who has that watch that you speak on, and we were comparing the efficacy of, do you want to measure your heart rate or do you want to measure your breath? And so, it'd be interesting, it really needs to be combined maybe because
right.
it all is good information and good feedback.
Yeah, definitely. Very cool. Well, the technology is coming forward to support us moving in the right direction. How sweet is that?
It's pretty cool, and
nice.
I just want to share because I think that right along the lines of all of the above.
Cool.
And it feels just kind of it makes it more playful because like I told you that one day that was difficult over the weekend. And now I feel like I'm challenging myself, just reinforcing my commitment to be love and move my breath and feel the feelings as they come and move it through. And,
right.
and recognizing even writing a silly text is going to create, at least in my body, shallow breathing, which would be unrecognizable, but, hey, it hit the 20%, reduction, so we're going to let you know.
Right.
And then I think also, let's say I started some serious exercise program or maybe I developed more, better breath habits, then it will grow with you. So the logarithms will change as you change.
Oh, cool.
Kind of like Siri learns
nice.
Your soul. Yeah, so it's something to put on the wish list.
Yeah, cool. Awesome, thank you. Thanks for sharing it. And while you're sharing, perhaps it's an appropriate time to share that you and Jeannie and I have been having a conversation. It looks like we're going to do an intensive or two up in Michigan, just outside of Lansing, at your home in October. So people can start looking at putting that on their calendar. It looks like we'll have a dozen or so spaces for people to come and be part of. It looks like we might do a 4-day Why is this happening to me again? Communication, codependence. We're looking at a number of different things. So if you're interested and you want to have some input on the topic of those intensives, but otherwise, Michelle has this awesome, beautiful home just outside of Lansing, advised to come up and do an intensive. So it looks like we're going to do that in October. Anything for you to share about that?
I already have five.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like so fun. That'll be cool. Well, it's going to fill up pretty quickly then, because I've got a couple other folks I've been talking to. And so if anybody's interested in joining us, let us know sooner rather than later. And we've got a list started, and we'll put you on that list and make sure that if you're ready to make a commitment, that you're one of the first to be let know when we get the schedule together. So keep us posted, everybody. All right. Well, thank you for that invitation. We look forward to heading up there. You did promise it was going to be a nice, warm October, right? It would be swimming weather, and it would be beautiful
mm-hmm.
in Michigan.
Well, we'll keep it cool a little bit, an extra 2 months. You know, I've got, got a property filled with trees, so the fall color will be beyond gorgeous.
It's going to be perfect for fall color.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Thank you for supporting me, and I will say goodbye for now. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Blessings. Lots of love. All right. Bye-bye. All right. Jeannie, anything else happening in the chat room? Anybody else with a hand up?
We have a hand up. It's area code 417. I think this might be Miss Julie Haverstick.
Yes, it is. I am. Calling
hey
in.
There, young lady. Welcome.
Hey. Well, I was
the wind
hoping
died down.
What was that?
I say, has the wind died down?
Yes, it's died down.
Oh, good.
And we had another big spill of rain, but that's sort of settled down too. The roads probably could use a little repair, but anyway, moving in from that, I noticed on Friday you were sharing about things happening to you. You know, that supported your healing. And, of course, you just did another sharing today. And, of course, you and I have experienced a lot of healing, or I've experienced healing with you being at Heartland all these years. But you know the big ditch I had dug in the backyard to help with the draining. And I think I sent you, Jeannie, some pictures of that. Right, Jeannie?
Right, yes.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Yeah, so anyway, I wanted to share this on Friday because you were talking about all these different things that had happened. And anyway, I was getting cinder blocks from my car and, you know, filling in this about, it's about a foot and a half deep. And I had about 6 more cinder blocks to put in the hole. And as I was standing there with the, I did just put the cinder blocks down. And I was just looking at the hole. And then all of a sudden, I'm in the hole. I'm starting to fall in the hole. I mean, literally, I mean, I'm like looking in the hole. And then I am falling in this hole.
Oh, and, did the ground give way underneath you?
It was one of those things that, you know, happened so quickly, you don't even know how it happened. But anyway, so I'm falling in the hole. I have my gloves on, which is fortunate because there's lots of rock around. So as I go in the hole, which I explained is about a foot and a half deep, and then my hands go on the other side, and then quickly I roll and flip, and I landed right on a rounded rock on my right buttocks, you know, where I was, you remember we had that pinched nerve thing, you know, going on years ago? And
yes.
It had been stirred, and, you know, I've been experiencing it off and on over this last 6 months, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, is that, you know, totally healed yet, whatever. Well, anyway, I landed on that really hard, and I sat there, and I said, okay, so, like, how do I feel, you know, because that was a pretty, you know, quick thing. And
right.
I felt so much, it was so, it's such a blessed moment. I felt like, you know, God created me going into that hole the way I went in, rolled over, landed on that. And just as I sat there, it was, well, now that's back into where it's supposed to be. That hip is pushed back in. And
right on.
I felt like I just had a healing. It was, you know, how you, when you experience a breath work or something, well, I had a life work, you know, it was right there. I went, wow, that is God in action, you know, and I got out of the hole and I was totally fine. And I could feel it was a little sore, but no bruise, no nothing. Everything was fine, and it's back in place.
Awesome.
And I just wanted to share that because that was a great example of you know, if you stay conscious and you stay aware, you can really experience the healing that's always happening for us. Always the positive thing that's happening.
Yeah, if we're staying in alignment, everything works together to bring out that result. You know, that scriptural promise, you know, all things work together for good. Now, it's interesting, the scriptures don't say all things work together for good for everybody. It doesn't say that. It says all things work together for good for those who stay connected to the active presence of the love of God, in essence. Mm-hmm. That when we stay connected to that, then even the untoward moments will open the space for, you know, my body to automatically move in just the right way. You know, why did my, and it kind of ties into where we started with that whole idea of the unconscious, you know, that I'll be, my unconscious will even be guided to move me in the direction of, gee, if I fell this way, I might end up with a slice in my leg. And if I fall that way, I'll end up with this nerve being released. Oh, I think I'll go that way. Split second, energetic dynamic. So very cool. Nice work.
Hey, it's like there's no thought happening, you know, when that happens. It's almost like, you know, it's just total spiritual event, you know, and,
yep.
You know, and then you're sitting there and I go, okay, it's good. And then you get the message, okay, things are okay. It's been pushed back and you just totally feel blessed. And you were also sharing today about, you know, that emotion happening. Do you remember that time when I said you, you know, I was out of the class and I went for a walk and I wasn't coming back to the class? Do you remember that?
Right.
And then
your cleansing process.
Right. So I was like, you know, and the class was having an intermission here at Heartland where I thought you were going to say we were going to do some intensives just now. Anyway, so I went down to the lake, and that's the time when I was walking down there, and I was thinking, why am I here anyway, if you remember? And I said, you know, Michael wants me to get up there and teach that lesson, whatever, and I don't want to get up there. And then I turned around and started walking up the hill, and then I really said, I just don't even know why I'm here. And then I got that answer, that inspirational answer that said, well, this is your purification process. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it well.
And then I came up to class, and then you were sitting there, and you know, there was quite probably about 20 people there, and you were just kind of like, you know, my perception of you was radiating love to the door that I was coming in on. And, you know, I wasn't even experiencing emotion until I got into the Heart Center, and then I just started sobbing, and remember, I was sobbing and sobbing. I must have sobbed for about a half an hour or more.
Floodgates open, yeah.
Crying, just like you're explaining, like what happened with this situation with that dog. It's just like it's there.
Yeah.
It just comes and comes. And I remember that, you know, other time I went through a healing, and I said to you, my body's crying, but I'm not, you know, and it was just crying. So when I think the opportunity presents itself, your body will cleanse if you allow it, if you just trust.
Absolutely. That's why all of the above are part and parcel of the process, and if we'll utilize every tool. And of course, the biggie, the cosmic grease of willingness, that
right.
More and more we're going to be moved in that direction. And then, you know, loving truth enough to let it open and to look for the support, ask for the support, instead of doing the old patterns of shutting it down and keeping it hidden away, like open it up and let it loose. It's powerful.
Right.
Well, thank you for rounding out the show with that experience. That just kind of ties it all right together. And from a lot of perspectives, and we're down to the last few seconds, so I'm just going to say thank you, everybody, for joining us. And Julie out in Oregon, Matthews, we the space for you being able to gracefully let go of your pup and stay connected to love. Everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pache, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here every Monday through Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more on Michael or myself or Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.